The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The radio home of the Buffalo Sabres. This is the Buffalo Sabres postgame show, live from KeyBank Center. Here's your host, Brian Cozio.
In the slot, he's got a shot here. Pass, far post, oh! Lukanen with a save rebound, they score! Referee right on top of it says that puck did cross the line, and it's a 3-1 Utah lead with 51.5 seconds to go in the second period.
There's your game winner, Nick Schmaltz, late in the second. Buffalo was outscored 3-0 in that second period. And they end up falling 5-2. The goal of the game from Schmaltz. It's brought to you by Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center. Early detection of cancer is our goal. Get in the game at roswellpark.org/WGR. Welcome back to KeyBank Center. Thanks for being with us. Brian Colziel with you here on the post game. We're going to be heading down to the locker room shortly, get Paul Hamilton's take. We'll get Lindy Ruff's post game comments. We'll get player reaction here. I don't know what of an explanation there'll be for this one. The Sabres came in losing five in a row. Their GM did not have his best day yesterday in front of the media. And then to lay an egg like this just seems extremely puzzling. And as Paul Hamilton said during some of the intermissions, it's not even as if this team just was outclassed or anything today. There seemed like such a lack of passion and energy. And it was from the Sabres' best players, too. The guys that seemingly were giving, I thought, very good effort tonight were some of the Amerks. I mean, you have Kozak, who was flying around, as he should in this case. But Malenstein, I thought, gave some solid effort. Dennis Gilbert back in the lineup. And that's about it. It wasn't good. Lukanen played great again, gave his team an opportunity, but too little too late. If I'm being picky, I think I would have pulled Lukanen maybe after the early third period goal when McBain scored to make it 4-1, just because it's over at this point. And, you know, I'm guessing you still want to play Lukanen games 4 and 5 of this homestand coming up Monday and Wednesday. Could have given him another period rest, but whatever, being picky there. But here's the thing. 2 weeks ago, the Sabres played in San Jose. They won and swept the California trip. So this is essentially on the actual clock right now. Less than 2 weeks ago, I know tonight it'll be 2 weeks officially, but less than 2 weeks ago, the Sabres were sitting in third place in the Atlantic Division with 23 points. They were only 3 points behind first place Toronto in their division. 2 weeks ago, 23 points, and they were three back of first place Toronto. Not only were they in a playoff position, but they were in third. in the Atlantic. 2 weeks later, the Sabres are now two from the bottom. And Montreal, who's in the bottom spot right now with 23 points, can tonight move into a tie with you if they beat Washington. I mean, that is how quickly it's flipped. 2 weeks of disastrous hockey, and they've lost six straight. And five of the six have been in this building, where over the course of this drought, they have just continued to find ways to just not perform well on any sort of consistent basis. Again, a pretty good crowd in here today. They're not. No one's here to see Utah. There's no stars on that other team. No one's here to see McDavid or McKinnon. I mean, Utah is not the draw today. And I, considering how bad this team has been playing, I thought it was a very, very good crowd. And this team gave them very, very little to cheer for, other than the fact that there were some passionate fans yelling things at the GM and the owner down the stretch of this game. That if you were in the building, you know what I'm talking about. But it was just 2 weeks ago. This team was in third. And the tone, man, it was so different around this organization. The wheels have fallen off so fast. It's like gasoline on a fire here that has just gotten started. It's incredible how quickly that has happened. Sabres fall here 5-2. Brian Colsey with you here on the post game. Sabres will next play against Detroit on Monday. That is at 7 o'clock, and then the Rangers on Wednesday. They'll close out the homestand. I mean, if they close this homestand without a win, geez, I mean, that would be not only 8 straight losses, but 7 straight at home. That's not going to help in terms of selling tickets for sure. It already has not. If you've been paying attention to the secondary market, you can get in this building for almost nothing now, for whatever that's worth. But the lack of effort today is definitely something that is puzzling, because this team essentially yesterday got called out, and the media calling them out. Kevin Adams, in some sense, you know, defended some of the players, also said, look, he's looking to make moves. He's trying to make moves. He says he's had made moves that have gotten virtually done that haven't, and not much of an effort back here today against a team that they should be able to handle. They're not playing the best teams in the NHL here in Utah. You want to give it to them against some of these other teams, maybe, but, I mean, Utah is not is a team, point percentage-wise, the Sabres came in at 4.81, Utah came in at 4.80. So, I mean, essentially the same. But the second period woes are just crushing this team right now. They gave up two goals right away to start the second, a 3.18 and a 3.42, 22 seconds apart. And then, you know, down the stretch, to me, one of the most frustrating plays is the fourth Utah goal. Cousins comes in. He's coming in with speed, with a lane to shoot. He passes it backwards into traffic. I don't know what he was thinking on that play. The whole building thought to shoot. He passed it back into traffic, turned it over. Back comes Utah, and on that rush, they score. Cousins is late getting back, and then he hurts himself, and he goes over to the bench, feeling with his shoulder. He did return, but man, I mean, what a sequence there. Just, again, the simple play, the direct play, the thing that this team has been coached into. I asked Paul in the pregame, like, you know, we'll get more on that in a moment. We have locker room interviews live. His first is Bo Byram with Paul.
Yeah, outworked and outcompeted. So whenever you're, you know, going to get outworked and competed like that, you're not going to win too many games.
Well, do you just need to see more passion, too, especially in that second period? It just seemed like you guys were dead.
Yeah, I think we got to see a lot more of a lot of things. I don't think you can necessarily pinpoint it on one thing or another, but that would for sure help, yeah.
Defensively, as a group, how do you have to be better in front of your net? It seemed like there were a lot of open guys for goals.
Yeah, we just got to do a better job of sorting it out and identifying down low and, you know, getting five guys in tight to help out. So, like you said, they seem to find a lot of openings around the net. And, You know, that's not good enough for many of us.
You guys really had gotten back to your identity in California, and it's obviously slipped since then. I mean, how do you sort out just how it's, you know, the team's play has deteriorated here the last week?
Yeah, it hasn't been good enough, and you know, we got to find a way to play well every single night, and especially when you're down in the standings like we are right now, you can't afford to give up easy points or, you know, get blown out of games. You got to be able to have a sniff every night. So, yeah, got to be better.
In the second period, it's been a bugaboo for you guys for a lot of this year. Is it just, do you have to be more careful in second periods because of the long changes, or what can you do to improve on that?
I think execution, to be honest. You know, we have chances to make easy passes and somehow we end up fumbling it and kicking it around, and then they're coming back the other way on us and can't get fresh guys on the ice. And you know, a tired hockey player is a bad hockey player, so you're gonna have troubles whenever you're stuck out there for a long time. And yeah, it's something we got to iron out for sure.
Thank you, Bo Byram on the post game. Brian, back to you.
Thank you, Paul. Bo Byram there, who's been playing a ton of minutes lately, and even more so now with the Dahlin injury. Tonight, Dahlin, or this afternoon rather, over 22 minutes. Power played over 23 minutes. A little bit more spread out across the board here today, but this game was one-sided down the stretch, so maybe not the urge to press some of these guys to play so much. That's part of the reason I was saying about maybe giving Lukanen in the third off after that fourth one went in so quickly. Sabres fall 5-2. They have lost six straight games. The crowd restless here in the third period at KeyBank Center. Chants about the general manager, chants about the owner. And they won't stop until the Sabres start winning again. Detroit is up next. More home games upcoming. Detroit Monday. The New York Rangers on Wednesday. And then the Sabres will go on a three-game road trip after that to Washington, Toronto, and Montreal. A ton of Eastern divisional opponents here coming up. Detroit, I mentioned the Rangers in the East. Caps, Toronto, Montreal, Toronto, Boston, all upcoming. So, if you want to think positively, I know it's tough to do right now. You're going to play all your divisional opponents here coming up. There's a chance that you can maybe do something about it. You can get a long win streak going. But as I mentioned here, 2 weeks ago, I am sitting there on postgame talking about that Sharks win and how they are in third place and how even on a night when James Reimer was playing in net, the Sabres figured out a way to win when they didn't have their best stuff. And 2 weeks later, holy cow. After what happened yesterday with the GM, and we know that wasn't what I'm sure what the team wanted to have happen, then this team with this 7 out of 8 game home stretch, 5 in a row here to start December, and they can't figure it out. We'll hopefully maybe get at least one more interview from the locker room coming up here shortly. We did hear from Bo Byram. We'll see if any other players are made available to get their reaction to this 5-2 defeat today. Tyson Kozak played a high-energy game, which was to be expected. He gets his first career goal. Congratulations to him on a nice tip-in. Malenstein set him up really, really nicely to get the scoring going in the first period. The Sabres' power play, again, has not done them well as of late. During that that stretch that I mentioned out west, the power play was going. Now, you don't have Dahlin. He obviously does a help to the power play. So, you know, that's a factor to bring up for sure. But 0 for 3 today. There's nothing even that you can yell about officiating if you're normally that guy. Utah didn't even get a power play in this game. 0 of 0. The Sabres were 0 of 3. That was something, you know, you get a goal there at some point, maybe that can change the dynamic of the game. Dynabraid.com power play update powered by Dynabraid Tools, proudly made here in Buffalo. Final shot totals here. Sabres end up with 25. It's still not enough, in my opinion. 7, 5, and 13 across the board over the three periods of play. Utah ends up with 28. And Buffalo had 12 shots through 40 minutes. They picked up 13 in the third. So they more than doubled their total just in the third. But they need more. Lindy Ruff even said it in the pregame. He said they miss the net too often. They have good scoring opportunities that they don't even have the goalie have to make a save on. That's something that has not been a new thing. You know, if you've watched this club over the drought or the playoff drought here, they miss the net as much as anybody. And Lindy Ruff is obviously now noticing it for sure. So that is something that today, in terms of actual shots on the goal, that wasn't improved in that category. Other stats, by the way, stats brought to you by Level Financial Advisors, helping you retire better. Visit levelfa.com. In the nets, Vemelka gets the win, 23 saves. Lukin in the loss, 23 saves. Now, no real help on a lot of those goals, for sure. Individually, let's see, Kozak's line, we were kind of paying attention to him tonight. A plus one, a goal in 12:09, and credited with a hit and two block shots. So a nice game for Kozak here in game two of his young NHL career. Dennis Gilbert getting more ice time than he normally gets, almost 15 minutes for him. He gets his first point as a Sabre with an assist and credited with seven hits. He tied for the lead in the game. Beck Malenstein ends up with seven hits. I thought Malenstein was flying today. I thought he had a very nice game. He also was a plus one and had two shots and made that really nice pass to Kozak, who was able to tip that home for the Sabre goal. Back to the room now. Live is Jason Zucker with Paul.
Jason, do you need to see more passion from the whole team, especially in the second period? It just seemed like you guys were dead.
It's not passion. It's execution. We weren't good enough tonight.
What has happened second periods recently? I mean, it's like seven straight games you haven't scored a goal. I mean, it's just, it's become a bugaboo for you guys.
Seems, I think we're starting games really well. And I don't know if it's a bit of complacency or what it is, but we got to fix the second periods. And then it seems like we come out in the third and we, you know, kind of get that fire back and start playing again. So we got to fix it.
11-6-1, that's not a small sample size. You guys were in a good place and really found your game on six straight. I mean, at this point, just, you know, everybody, you know, the standings, everybody knows what it is. You feel just, I don't know, guys tensing up or maybe overthinking when it comes to going into these games and, you know, this last week and a half or so?
No, I think we've actually played it in that stretch, played some really good hockey. Tonight wasn't one of those games. I think we've played a couple really good games that we lost, and then it seems like we get away from that game following it for whatever reason. You know, I'm not thinking of all of them, but I thought last game we played well and we lose. I thought Minnesota we played well and we lose. But we're, you know, we can't be about more victories and playing well and, you know, being okay playing well and losing. We're not playing well enough, and we're definitely not playing consistent enough. And that's on us in this room. We got to fix it, and, you know, we will.
How do you get yourself out of this?
I think it's just execution. I think it's getting back to our game and thinking about the execution piece of it. You know, you can't go offside eight times in a game, or I don't know how many it was today, but regardless, we just need to get back to executing the way we know how to. It's not a care thing. This room cares. This room has a lot of guys that care and want to do the right thing. It's about doing it time and time again.
Where does the lack of execution come from? I mean, you guys practice a ton. There's plenty of time working together. How does that happen in the games?
It's a good question. I don't necessarily have a good answer for that. We're just not executing well enough. And it's hurting us right now.
Utah had, would it be the same thing, execution? Like, Utah had a lot of open guys on their shots. Is that the same thing, just executing as a group defensively?
Yeah, exactly. Execution doesn't mean making backdoor passes and scoring beautiful goals. It means playing the system the right way. It's being on your guy when you need to be on your guy, blocking shots when it's your turn, being net front. It's all the aspects of the game, you know, all drive the execution piece of it. And that's what we're not doing. We know that we have a lot of skill in this room. We're going to execute offensively. It's about executing the game plan and implementing every piece of it and doing it consistently night after night.
Are there habits that you're seeing reoccur night after night that are taking you out of your system?
I don't think so. I think I think there's been some good games that we've played and put some really good pieces of hockey in there even during this losing streak. But you know, you got to find a way to get out of it. It seems like when you're in these things, it's harder and harder every game, but you got to find a way to dig in, get that win, and then kind of move forward from there.
Thank you, Jason. Jason Zucker on the post game. Brian, back to you.
Thank you, Paul. Zucker, I thought, was one of those few players tonight that did bring energy and some effort as the Sabres fall 5-2 and have lost now six straight. So, yeah, I mean, you look at what they're getting in net. I think they're getting goaltending performances from Lukanen that are good enough to give you a chance to win almost every night. During this six-game losing streak, I can't sit here and think of any of these six games where we sat here at the end of the night and said, well, their goaltender failed them tonight, or, wow, that was an off night for Lukanen. I don't think so. I think it's been a lot of this team's inability to score. I mean, you look at Winnipeg. Let's see. Tonight, the Sabres score 2. Winnipeg, 2. Islanders, 0. Vancouver, 3. Minnesota, 0. So the goals are not coming. I mean, that's really it there. The offense and the power play in that stretch has been really bad, too. And you look at the power play in these losses here, in the six straight losses. 0 for the night against Minnesota. 0 for the night against Vancouver. 0 for the night against the Islanders. 0 for the night against Colorado. 1 of 3 against Winnipeg. And then 0 for the day today. So they have one power play goal in this six-game stretch. That also is something that was working well for them when they were climbing themselves up in the standings. That is not right now. Again, you know, willing to say that they are missing Dahlin here in these last two, but he did play in 4 of these 6 losses, and he wasn't necessarily great in those. We know he has back spasms, so now maybe we can at least connect the dots as to why is Rasmus Dahlin why are we not seeing the best from the Sabres captain? He's got back spasms. That, unfortunately, is an injury that maybe doesn't have a firm timetable. I mean, maybe he feels good over the weekend and he can play Monday night. Maybe it lingers with him for weeks. Who knows? That's what's kind of, I'm sure, going to be tough from the Sabres standpoint of really not knowing when their best defenseman is going to be back here. There is good news on Jordan Greenway and Matias Samuelsson. They are getting closer to returning. Paul indicated that maybe Greenway would be first amongst those two. And Jack Quinn is also, I'm sure, wanting to get back in the lineup too. But I wouldn't take Tyson Kozak out in his 2 games here. He's played well. Kulik scored again today. He shows signs of, I think, good play. He also shows signs of being a raw young player. Even him trying the behind-the-legs move down 5-1, I'm sure maybe you would suggest not doing a play like that on a night where you're, you know, getting it handed to you by your opponents. But, again, we're sitting here saying anything right now that Tyson Kozak and Yuri Kulik are the biggest problems with this organization. We know there's a lot of them. Kulik, to me, you know, I don't know if he'd be my first guy out to put Quinn back in either. I mean, again, Obe Kubel, in terms of production, is very little. That's part of the reason Quinn is out. Lindy Ruff said the other night, why is Quinn out? Well, he said, you know, there are some reasons, but to give you the short answer, it's production. Quinn right now this year has 1 goal and 4 assists. His 1 goal was into an empty net. So that has to be better for sure. But, yeah, that's the latest with the injuries. Again, Dahlin back spasm. That could be a boost to get him back if he's able to play on Monday against Detroit. That's your injury report. It's brought to you by the Orthopedic Center at Catholic Health's St. Joseph Campus. Go with Joe's. Dylan Cousins on that play that I was mentioning was very frustrating to watch. He goes down on a rush early third. Again, you could say the game's still in play. They're down 3-1. Has an open lane to shoot. He decides to pass it back in traffic. Utah comes the other way after the turnover. They score. Cousins had a collision. It looked like maybe his shoulder was hurt. He went down the tunnel about halfway for as far as maybe we could see. Then he came back out of the bench. Then he went back out on the tunnel, and then he came out. I don't even know if he would have even necessarily missed a shift. But maybe there's something, who knows? Well, you know how sometimes we notice something like that, and then the next practice, well, where's Dylan Cousins? And he's not out there. So we'll see if maybe Lindy Ruff will give us an update on anything if Dylan Cousins is banged up there at all. But the Sabres do have some injuries as of this point. Greenway, Samuelsson, Dahlin. Obviously, for their sake, you hope that they're not going to have to add Cousins to the list. 5-2, Utah wins it. Coming up here any moment, we're going to hear from Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff and his live press conference. We'll take you there as soon as he meets with the media. Also, a little bit later on in postgame, I know there were some people that didn't get a chance to talk or didn't get a chance to hear Kevin Adams and his entire press conference in its entirety. We'll play it for you at the end of the postgame. If you're listening in your car, we appreciate it here. Your drive home from the game brought to you by Paddock Chevrolet with you for the extra mile. All right. Well, this loss puts Buffalo now in a spot, like I said. If Montreal wins tonight, That would put Montreal at 25, the same total as the Sabres. Again, you want to. There's good news and bad news. Well, I'll go through more in the standings in a moment. Lindy Ruff is making his way to the media room. Let's take you there live.
You win a lot of Utah's goals. They had a lot of open guys. What was wrong with the execution with your guys defensively there?
Wrong spot a couple times. You look at the second goal, it should be our puck. We run into the referee. I think it's the fourth goal, we have a chance to make the game 3-2. Lack of execution. Now you're on a long shift. You don't get back. Shift's over a minute. Our puck play, I thought, was the worst I've seen.
You guys were offsides several times. I missed the net in key situations. We just overall lack of execution, especially with the urgency that the group should have. I mean, five-game losing streak. Just how do you explain it?
You can't explain it. You can't explain offside. To a man. Maybe a tight one you can, but if when you're offside by a foot or so, it eliminates an opportunity. I just thought our puck play coming from our end out of the zone. And I know when you're missing a Dahlin, your puck play won't be as good. It won't be as efficient. But we still made some poor decisions on where we put the puck.
Why the second period has been so bad recently? I know you talked about the long change.
Well, you look at the start of the second again. You look at our first play at the blue line. We win a faceoff by our bench. We go from, I believe it's Thompson, to that play should be over to your D partner. I should go from Thompson. If Thompson had it for a second, it goes to Power maybe. That's the player I think it was out there. You hard rim, you get it. Now you start to play a 200-foot game. We try to make a pass to somebody that's covered at the blue line. You turn it over, and you're fueling their offense. That's part of execution.
Cousins play before the fourth goal. I mean, he's got to shoot the puck there. I mean,
there's two things, Mike. You either shoot the puck or you make the play. The play's there to be made. If you make the play or you shoot the puck, 1-2, he's at the end of his shift. So now you have to come back tired. Benson has to come back tired. Paterka's got to come back tired. And you saw what that looked like.
You guys have played well against Winnipeg. Do you just sense that losing in that manner, the frustration involved with the challenges, never? Do you just feel like they responded poorly going into this?
I mean, I'm not going to offer excuses. No, this is the NHL. You got to. I mean, when you look at, I look at the Kozak, how well he played, and then he gets a goal. Cooley gets a goal. We need more from other guys.
How frustrated are you? Sound like it, honestly. I mean, you had a good month stretch, and now here you are. You're in a rut. What are you feeling?
I think you can guess how I'm feeling. My job is to get him out of it. That's my job. That's on me to get him out of it. To stay with the process. Don't deviate. Even just that small play. Don't go off. I mean, this is like mentally one of the weakest games I've seen, where you go offside that number of times. You don't execute the small play. So if you look at the execution on two of the goals, we could have got it out of our zone. Getting it out of our zone has been a big deal. We've talked about get it out of your zone. We turned two pucks over on two goals that it's on our tape, and it results in a goal. So the execution part in us executing at a high level was not good. Just go back on the ice, practice the simple stuff that leads to the better plays. You know, I think feeling pressure. Can you handle pressure? Yeah, I've talked about the being comfortable. I mean, we had a 1-0 lead. We had a 1-0 lead. So, and we got a break on a goal that got called back. That, you know, could have went either way again. It was another one of those ones you got a challenge and you don't really know what the result's going to be. But we had a 1-0 lead starting the second period with, you know, you're missing some key personnel, affect their per. We have, like, the execution part of not going offside, getting pucks deep, making them play a 200-foot game. They're a good team. Don't be surprised by how well they played. They got some really mobile guys. I've watched parts of the Vegas game where they dominated them. The Dallas game, there was parts of that game they dominated them. We knew that they're a really good skating team with that top two lines, having a lot of skill. So if you're gonna, if you can't execute the simple plays, you can fuel some of their offense, and that's what we did.
How hard is it to break the bad habits that we've seen from a lot of these guys that have been here for 2, 3, 4 years, making the same mistakes that we've seen?
We were getting pretty good at not making them. We got to get back to that. That's on me.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, that is Lindy Ruff and his meeting with the media following the 5-2 loss to Utah. It's brought to you by Steve Foley Law. If you've been injured, it's time to get serious. Time to call Steve Foley Law. Toward the end there, you could really, really sense his frustration level when he said the quote that jumped out to me. He was asked about, you know, this and that, and he's like, look, I'm not going to offer excuses. This is the NHL. Like, yeah, this is the best league on the planet with the best players in the world, getting paid handsome money to do so. And then he says it was one of the worst games he's seen mentally from this team. There were a lot of questionable decisions for sure. I know people are saying about, you know, Lindy, I think this task with this group is a very, very challenging one. It might be impossible with the group that that has been assembled here. Paul has said it, like, do you even have the right group here that can make you win? Maybe not. But I have faith that at least what Lindy is seeing is what we're watching, and that he knows what needs to be addressed. Now, can he fix it? Good luck. You know, I think he's got a very, very difficult job. But from listening right there, he's saying a lot of things that I think if you watch this team and you follow this team and you consider yourself someone that is reasonably knowledgeable in hockey, you at least have to feel like right there, okay, that man who maybe could be retired laying on a beach somewhere is here and he has passion and he wants to win and he is taking accountability for the things that he can take accountability for, and he is going to do whatever he can to try to figure out what he can do to fix this team. I think what he's saying is correct. It was terrible decisions. I think they were awful around the net. I think they made passes today that made no sense, putting themselves offsides that he couldn't even explain. Yes, Lindy, I'm watching the same thing and nodding, and many of you listening are nodding, saying the same thing. So at least it makes me feel good that the coach is also aware of what's happening and is willing to say what's happening in a bad way, of course, and is at least sounding passionate like he wants to fix it. Again, I wish him the best of luck. I think with this group, it's going to be very, very challenging. But at least if somebody says to me, like, hey, Brian, do they have the right coach? Right now, I can at least say I think they do. 5-2 Utah is victorious. The Sabres have lost 6 in a row. 5 of those 6 games have been in this building at home. All right, we're going to say goodbye to all of our local affiliates. If you want to keep listening to the postgame, go to WGR550.com, or you can listen in on the Odyssey app. Still to come, Paul Hamilton's take is coming up. We'll update you on the standings. We'll also replay Kevin Adams' entire press conference from yesterday. If you missed that, that's coming up too. 5-2, the Utah Hockey Club wins its first ever game here in Buffalo. I'm Brian Colziel. This is the Buffalo Sabres Radio Network.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Carcone to the corner. Connor Clifton finishing his check down there. Right in front. Lukanen with a big save at the near post. Oh boy, do the Sabres need that one from Ukko-Pekka Lukanen.
Well, there's one of the players that did play well today. Ukko-Pekka Lukanen giving his team a chance. Save of the game right there. Brought to you by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your local Upstate Honda dealer today. 5-2, Utah is victorious here today. Next up is Detroit on Monday night, 7 o'clock. The Steve Foley Law pregame will be at 6. All right, we're going to check the scores and the standings in a moment, but let's go down to the media room and get Paul Hamilton's take on this one. Paul, I don't know if you could sense, well, I guess I'll ask you since you were standing there. I sensed way up here in the press box that toward the end of that press conference, Lindy was getting frustrated by what he called maybe the worst mental decision game of the season. I said after the press conference that I at least feel happy in the sense that for Sabre fans, they know that maybe the coach behind the bench is saying and seeing the same thing that maybe we all are too. He does have maybe what would also be considered an impossible task. How do you get these guys to play consistent each and every game, because clearly they aren't doing it right now?
Yeah, and it's something we've seen now for a couple of years. It's not every game, but, you know, when the chips are down, this is a very mentally soft team, and it has been, and it continues to be. And they don't operate well under pressure when real pressure is on. How many times did Don Granato tell us that last year? How he's constantly working on because they're under so much pressure and they can't operate under pressure and they should
be able
to.
Sorry to interrupt. And Paul, Don Granato was not someone that really ever criticized them in the media. So for him to come out and say that, like, that took a lot. So if he was sensing that, you know it was happening.
Yeah, and you know, as Kevin Adams said, I think after Granato was fired, that these are NHL players. These are guys that have had pressure their whole lives, and I agree with him. And, you know, there's some of these guys have won gold medals with Team Canada or Team USA or whoever, in Lukanen's case, Team Finland. They've operated under those pressures, but for whatever reason, they don't seem to be able to operate under pressure in the NHL, and they fold. And it's just... You know, you documented it earlier that it was just 2 weeks ago tonight they were playing good hockey. They were in third place in the Atlantic Division. They were right behind the defending champion Florida Panthers. And it took 2 weeks for this to happen, to start playing like this. I didn't see a lot of passion, especially in that second period. Jason Zucker disagreed with me, and I respect him. You know, he said it's not passion, it's execution that is the problem. You know, Bo Byrums, you know, talked about, and he's absolutely right. When you're outworked and outcompeted, you're not going to win too many games. Absolutely. I mean, how many of the Utah goals were guys just standing by themselves where, you know, you're not executing defensively? You know, and it was a good explanation by Zucker there, talking about when people think of execution, they're thinking about executing a two-on-one or offensively or scoring goals. The execution is all over the ice. And they're not, as a group, executing well defensively at all. And again, just like last year, we know they're capable of it when they feel like it or when they do it or when they aren't feeling the pressure. They can play well defensively. I watched them do it. They didn't go 7-2 and climb up to third place in the Atlantic Division by playing this kind of hockey. They did it by playing the kind of hockey that Lindy Ruff wants them to play. But there's been nothing in the last two seasons and a quarter that I've seen that would make me think they could play on a consistent basis like they did when they were 7-2 or they were 4-1-1. Nothing. There, I have seen nothing that would make me think they could do that on a consistent basis or do what Lindy Ruff asked them to do. And then the next two opportunities, they did it. If you lose a game, you are going to lose a game. If you lose a game, you got good teams go out and win the next one. They don't let it turn into two or three or four. And in the next two losses, that happened. They lost the game, and they won the next one. A little bit later, they lost another game, and they won the next one. Just exactly what it is. So, again, they showed us they can do it. It's not like they're bad hockey players. They know how to be good hockey players. They know how to play well because we've seen it. Even two different systems. When they played Granados, the way he wanted them to play well, they usually won. This is probably a better, not probably, this is a better system under Lindy Ruff. When they do what he asks them to do, they play well, they usually win. They score goals, and they win, and they're good at defending. But it just never lasts, and then it turns into this, and then they don't know how to get out of it. Because, again, mentally, I mean, Lindy Ruff talked about, you know, he thought this was mentally their worst game. I don't disagree with that.
Yep. No, I think he's right on with a lot of what we're seeing. Paul Luukkonen, I thought, did his best to give them a chance to keep them in it. And there were some players that I think, you know, it's hard to sit here and say played well when they lost 5-2. But Tyson Kozak, obviously, in his second game, not that we would expect him to slack off in any way, but what a great moment for him. When, you know, you talked with him in the pregame. The high and the low of scoring your first NHL goal, then the disappointment of being taken away, and he comes back and gets it. Now, Malenstein did a really nice job to set him up for it, but good for him for finishing that playoff.
And, you know, it was good for him, and I was glad to see that. And it wasn't everybody that didn't show passion. You just named two players that I thought did. I thought Zucker showed passion in that game. I thought Dennis Gilbert showed passion in that game. You don't want him to, you know, the one goal was because he knocked a guy into his goaltender and his goaltender was injured for a little bit. But I don't blame him for that. I want to see that kind of play around the net. Unfortunately, he accidentally knocked a guy into his goaltender and it cost him a goal. Okay. Things happen.
Yep.
But that's the type of thing I'm looking for. Eliminate guys around the net. Hopefully don't eliminate him into your goaltender, but eliminate guys. And I saw passion from him. Malenstein, Kozak, him. I'm missing one. There was another one. Zucker. You know, Zucker. Those are the guys I saw passion from. But unfortunately, it wasn't contagious enough. I mean, I'm sitting there watching the second period just like I can't. It's like I love hockey, and I was bored out of my mind. It's like three shots, none of them dangerous. Nothing's going on. Nobody has any passion. Nobody's doing anything. It right near the end of the period, they finally got a couple of more shots, except for Zucker, by the way, who got one of those shots. And, they wind up with five shots in the period. And it's just like, I just need to see more from guys. And it's just... there's just nothing to tell me that I've seen from this group in 2 years that makes me think that I'm going to see them play all the time or most of the time. You're not going to always play well. I will say most of the time, like they did when they were 7-2 or like they did when they were 4-1-1.
Now, if there is positive, Paul, they still are only 3 points back of the last playoff spot. So it's... the season is not over. They're 27 games in. You are doing what they tend to do, which is start to accumulate a pile of teams that you have to pass to get to that. But the season isn't over. So if Lindy Ruff can pull out miracles here and fix this and get it consistently done, I mean, we can still have a season to talk about. But now you have another team in here on Monday who is playing as bad as anybody in the league, Detroit. They're a minus 15 goal differential. They've only won 3 of their last 10. They are actually one of the only teams that actually have less points than you. So, again, the door is open for them on Monday if they choose to go through it.
Yeah, and, you know, I know last year the booing became a problem, but the fans this year have been fairly tolerant. You know, the booing happened in Colorado game, and it should have, and Lindy Ruff said the same thing, but they deserve to be booed.
Yeah.
And they deserve to be booed tonight. There's no question about, or this afternoon, I'm sorry. And there's no question about that. But overall, it hasn't been anywhere near what it got to last year when they got all mad and everything because they, you know, it's like, well, they're our fans. Why aren't they not supporting us? And I think the fans this year have been fairly tolerant. You can correct me if you think I'm wrong. But I think they've been fairly tolerant. And they had, you know, until this streak, they hadn't played all that poorly in this building for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, I thought they had played pretty good hockey in this building. Now, you know, what, five in a row now in a six-game streak. Five of them have been in this building, and the fans are fed up again.
They have six wins at home in 16 games. That's not good.
Yeah, and five of them just game in a row.
Yeah.
Please don't count the game in rebel. I'm a rebel with that. That to me, that's not a home game. So I do not.
6-15, yes.
I always just say.
What Paul is saying is the Prague game. I know.
Yeah. I always just say their record in Buffalo.
Yes.
that eliminates that problem.
Their record in Buffalo is they have 6 wins in 15 games. Yes.
Right. Right.
The point is still the same. They still have not been good at home. Yes.
Yeah. But they were.
Yes.
Until now. And it's just, who knows when the end comes? I can't predict. I don't know. You know when the end comes? Is when they start playing the way they did when they were winning. Or like they did against Minnesota. But they can't be happy with, all right, well, we played well enough when we got a point. Yeah, that's good that you got a point. But you still have lost six games in a row. And yeah, last game you got a point. But no moral victories. You had to turn. You got the point, and you did what you had to do. We've been complaining for a while now that every team in the league has more loser points than they do because they don't get games to overtime. Well, they got the game to overtime, so give them credit for that, that they at least locked it up and got the 1 point. Now you got to go get the two. And in both the last overtime losses here, they had golden opportunities to win the game in overtime and couldn't execute it and couldn't do it. So, you know, that was the, you know, where you could have broken this losing streak right there, doing it that way. So, yeah, a couple of the losses here in the sixth, they played well, but it doesn't matter. It's win now. And that should be their motto. I'm not mocking them. I agree with them. That should be their motto. That should have been said in the preseason. Win now. And the moral victories can't be satisfying.
Well said. Paul, thank you for your work today throughout. Appreciate it. We'll see you here Monday for the Red Wings game.
Okay, talk to you then.
All right, Paul Hamilton down in the media room. Again, 7 o'clock on Monday night, Sabres and Red Wings. The Steve Foley Law pregame is at 6. We're going to hear from Kevin Adams and his press conference from yesterday coming up here in just a moment. But before we do that here and we update you on the standings, let's get the scoreboard in and check what's going on elsewhere. And it's brought to you by Fiegel, Carr, and Joyce, your border attorneys. All right, let's start in the NHL. Just two other games going on today in the afternoon schedule. In overtime, Boston gets a win by a score of 4-3. Pavel Zaka's seventh of the season at 2:49 of the overtime, getting it done. So the Bruins pick up two more points. Philadelphia gets a loser point in that game today. 9 minutes to go of the first period in Chicago. The Blackhawks have a 1-0 lead on Winnipeg. Of course, the Jets were here in Buffalo on Friday and won in overtime. 5 o'clock, Carolina is at the Islanders. 6 p.m., Florida hosts San Jose. Now to the night schedule, 7 o'clock, Washington is at Montreal. Nashville in Ottawa to take on the Senators. The Red Wings, who will be here Monday, they host Colorado at 7. Toronto at Pittsburgh, 7 o'clock. 8 p.m., one game, L.A. hosts Minnesota. And at 10, one game, it's Edmonton hosting St. Louis. Let's get a Big Four college hoop score in. Down in Olean today, the Bonnies and the Bulls of UB going at it. 7:16 to go in the first half. St. Bonaventure leads Buffalo 20-13. The Bonnies are 8-1. The Bulls are 5-4. So that game is on ESPN Plus if you're looking to watch. Syracuse, the men's hoops team, falling to 4-4. They're at Notre Dame, and the Irish win 69-64. By the way, if you want that Bulls-Bonnies game, that's on our sister station, the Bet 1520. So you can watch that there. Let's go to college football now. Busy day for conference championships. The SEC game is underway in Atlanta. Number 2 Texas and number 5 Georgia, they are scoreless. 7 minutes to go in the first quarter in that one. Later tonight, the Sun Belt Championship, Marshall in Louisiana. 8 p.m., big one of the Big Ten. Number 1 Oregon and number 3 Penn State. Also at 8 o'clock, an automatic berth on the line for the playoff. The ACC title game, number 8 SMU and number 17 Clemson going at it. That one is in Charlotte. One final from earlier, Paul Hamilton, shut your ears. His Iowa State Cyclones, ranked 16th in the country, they get crushed today in the Big 12 title game against number 15 Arizona State, 45-19. The MAC championship game, the champions are the Bobcats from Ohio. They roll Miami 38-3. All right, there's your look at the NHL, college hoops, college football. Our game here, Utah 5, Buffalo 2. The Sabres have lost 6 in a row. 2 games left on this homestand. Again, Detroit on Monday and the New York Rangers on Wednesday before Buffalo goes on the road for 3 against the Capitals, the Leafs, and the Canadiens. All right, well, before we leave you here, I know many still talking about Kevin Adams and his press conference from yesterday. This team going through a losing skid, him facing some tough questions yesterday about where this team is at. Paul asking him questions about the core, trades, you know, Lindy Ruff, all that coming here, the young players, some of the contracts, the cap space, all that on the table yesterday with the Sabres GM. So if you missed any of it, here's a chance to hear it. Here's Sabres GM Kevin Adams on the postgame.
I mean, we talk a lot about accountability in our organization, and it starts with me. You guys asked me to be here and answer questions, so that's what I'll do. If you're looking for me to be panicking or overreacting because of the last few games, that's not my style, but happy to answer questions.
Kevin, you've got 11 wins in 26 games. You're 12th in the East. You're 23rd in the league right now. You're coming off. You're 3 days removed from one of the most disgraceful losses in the history of the franchise. Why is your team so mentally fragile, and what are you going to do about changing the composition of this mix?
Yeah, I think the Colorado game is, that's tough. You know, that's one of those games that, you know, they wins and losses at the end of the day all count the same, but those ones hurt. And there's a lot of reasons, I think, as you watch the video and you go back, that, you know, we unraveled, and we need to learn from that and be better. You know, I think if I'm looking to the positives of, you bring in Lindy, new system, we're 26 games into the year. You know, some of the stuff that I look at trying to judge our team, there's some positives there and reasons to believe that we're going to take some steps, which we need to. We're not happy with where we are. We need to get better. But, you know, you look at, you know, even strength, expected goals for, goals against, we're right where you want to be, you know, to be a playoff team. You know, we're surrounded, I think it's Jersey, Dallas, LA, maybe. There's just good teams in that mix right with us. So there's some things that I look at when you try to step back and zoom out and take some of the emotion out that are positive signs.
Whether it's the Islanders loss or the Colorado loss, or honestly just some of these games where you see the lapses, the extended lapses, your most experienced forwards are typically not the ones that are sort of unraveling in these moments. It's your younger guys who are kind of repeating the same mistakes, turning the puck over in the neutral zone, and really just not following the game plan that Lindy presents to them on a night in and night out basis. So what's your level of concern about just the waves, those, you know, kind of the roller coaster that group is kind of going through right now, and does it make you sort of reconsider how you're going to handle younger players and promoting them to the NHL in the future, since it's not easy to win this league, and, you know, development's not linear, especially when you're doing it up at this level?
Well, you just answered your own question. I mean, development is not linear. It's there's ups and downs. And you have to understand that when you're building your team, that you're going to go through that when you have young players in the lineup. And, you know, I'm a firm believer there's no better way to learn than to go through it and experience things. And, you know, I mean, you can use Kulik on a two-on-one last night. You know, he's a shooter, and yeah, I think he shoots the puck there. He scores more often than he doesn't. And, you know, that's just the learning part. So you live with those things. But, no, you have to go through it. You have to get better. We're 26 games in, and you're going to have ups and downs. And you look at where we are, you know, you think about probably from the, I don't know, wherever, the Rangers all the way towards the bottom of the Eastern. All these teams are really tight, going through similar things, good stretches, bad stretches, within games, good stretches, bad stretches. And our job, you know, as management staff or the coaching staff, is to clean up some of these things, get more consistent, and find ways that you come out of games with 2 points. You know, you look at last night, did a lot of good things. I'm not sure we gave up a scoring chance in the third period, or at least a grade A scoring chance. You have 3 2-on-1s in overtime, we don't capitalize, and they go down the other end and do. So we need to get better.
Instead of young players,
a big picture type of a thing for your core group, I'm looking at like two full years and a quarter of this season. When you look at the whole picture of what they've done and how they've performed, do you look at it at all and say, I might have to make some changes in the core group that you have set? Just looking at everything they've done from 2 years ago, where many of them had career years, to last year to this year.
You're talking about just in general,
your
not
core,
like just
young
a young core.
That you've locked up many of them. And
yeah.
When you look at that group, what are your thoughts? And are your thoughts maybe you might have to change something?
Well, you're always evaluating. I mean, you're always looking at every possible scenario to improve your team. And like, I think I'm pretty consistent with how I've said to you guys that nothing should be off the table. We should be in every conversation, which we are, and evaluating, is there ways to help your team improve? And if there are, then we'll attack it. I mean, you look at, I think just philosophically, Paul, how, you know, set out to build this franchise is you have to draft and you have to develop well. And we're in that process. And when development sometimes means some rough times, like we've talked about, you know, with Lance's question. But I truly believe if you draft well, you develop well, you work through some of the growing pains, and you can get a team in a good spot with the people that you've kind of brought up through your system, it gives you an advantage. And then you round it out. I mean, you look with trades, you look to see if there's ways to help your roster, supplement your roster. I mean, I think you look at our roster right now with Byram, Greenway, Tuck, Krebs, Malenstein, well, there's probably another one or two, I'm forgetting, McLeod. Those are all guys that we traded for that come in and, you know, play roles on your team. So you're trying to add to that group. And, you know, I mean, honestly, Paul, like, this is not a time, we're not a destination city right now, where you're going to be able to go out and get UFAs that are the key guys. And I just don't think that's the way to build a sustainable winner. So you evaluate your core, you look for trades that you can have players that can grow with you and add to your team. If there's UFAs that you can add that make sense, that work, of course you're going to be open to doing that. So that's what we're in the process of. But to circle back, yeah, you always look at everything, and if there's ways to improve, we'll do it.
So some of those younger, you know, players, your average age is still the youngest in the league, and it's hard to go back and find teams that have an average age under 26 and make the playoffs. So how do you square that roster building strategy with the idea that you're trying to win now, as you said?
Yeah, maybe you should have signed Craig Anderson, and he's 40, and then it would have added a year, and then you wouldn't answer the question.
Six players that are, what, 23 and under?
Yeah, and that's exactly what I told you. When you're going to make a decision to build a franchise, sustainable success over year after year, you're going to have to go young. And you're going to have to give players the opportunity to, you know, battle through some of the ups and downs. I believe our roster is talented. We should be a team that is competing and in the playoffs. I've said that since the summer. I truly believe that. And in saying that, you're going to have, when you have a young roster, you're going to have mistakes. And we have a new coach that's putting in certain types of intricacies into the system. We're 26 games in. So that's why I said in the beginning, you know, I'm not happy with where we're at, but we're not going to panic. We're not going to overreact. We're not going to make a knee-jerk decision or reactionary trade that, you know, sets you back. We have to look at things that we think are going to improve our team, and we'll act on.
So 26 games into the season.
Fan base.
Let's go with Bill, please.
Yeah, let Bill eat.
So 26 games, more than a quarter into the season. What has been Lindy's impact? What has he changed? What's different?
Well, I do think there's a accountability is such a hard word to like frame for you guys, because you don't see it behind the scenes. You know, you don't see the subtle meetings, or you don't know about a late night phone call that Lindy has with a player after a game. That those are just impactful. His experience, when to maybe not practice versus practice, and you know, just all those types of things. I think there's been a huge impact. And like I said, I mean, to win in this league, like in really win in this league, you have to be defensively sound. You have to play with structure. You have to be like able to play and find ways to get points when you maybe don't have your energy or, you know, your A game, so to speak. So those are all the things I think Lindy's done a really good job of. But like I said, it is a process, you know, and their coaches are working through that right now with our players, and there's a little bit of learning curve that I think our team's going through. But I think they would all stand up here and say that we need to take a step for sure.
When you say after a loss like Tuesday night, what do you say to a fan base that's sick of hearing about learning and development and growing, and they want to make the playoffs now? What do you say to those fans?
Yeah, I'd say I understand, but I also say you don't make the playoffs in December 6th. You know, you need 82 games. And, hey, I'm going to be honest with you guys, that was a tough loss, and that loss hurt. And I promise you that it bothers me and the coaches and the players more than anyone. So, but it's one game. You have to go back over the video. You have to talk about it. You have to own it, and you have to move on to the next one. And that's why I do think, I know we got 1 point instead of two last night, but I think it was a good sign out of our team that we didn't carry that game over into the next game. That's a sign of growth for me.
Kevin, we've seen Dahlin's growth curve over the years. Now we're watching Owen Power, a number one pick. He gave an $8 million a year contract to now. And even though he's 22 years old, he's on a different plane of attention and focus. And how do you get him in the defensive zone to play defense, to guard the front of the net, to actually use his size and be aggressive and not just stand there and do nothing, which we see over and over and over again?
You see some of the good things too?
I see a lot of the good things offensively, for sure. His offensive numbers are near the top of the league in certain areas, but he's a defenseman you paid $8 million to.
So the guy, like, you have to look at the whole body of work, Mike. You know, like, I'm sure you're referring to the goal against the Islanders where, you know, the guy slips in and the redirect, and you're the bet and the game-winning goal against Colorado where,
yeah,
like, those are obvious. And, of course, he's a work in progress. I would tell you that I think Owen played just under 30 minutes last night, and was, I thought he competed hard last night and did a lot of good things, and you could see him looking to engage physically. When we drafted Owen Power, we knew he was not bringing Scott Stevens, like, that's not his style. But do we want him to become more physically imposing and harder to play against? Yes, and I think there's a daily work that's going in right now with the coaches and Owen to do that. And he wants to do that. Like, he wants to get better. And that's, to me, I've said this to you guys before, that I want players that show up every day and want to get better and find ways, and he is that guy. And in terms of his contract, look, I mean, there'd be 31 other teams would be lining up to have him on their team. I promise you that.
Kevin, when you say that this is not a destination city, I understand where you're coming from with that. When it comes to players who are UFA or players who maybe have, you're pursuing in a trade that may have Buffalo on a list that they don't want to go to, how do you break through to them or to their agents to say, listen, this is where success can happen for you?
You have to earn it. I mean, look, this for me, it's really simple. you become a perennial playoff team, you make the playoffs, you have a chance to win Stanley Cup year after year, you are on less teams, no trade list. We don't have palm trees. We have taxes in New York. Those are real. And those are things you deal with. But and trust me, I'm in conversations every day, and there's a lot of players in this league that were on their list. So we need to earn the respect, and it starts with getting over the hump, getting in the playoffs, competing. And once you do that, I mean, look at the Bills. I mean, that would be a perfect example. I would, you know, assume that this wasn't a destination or a place that a lot of people were signing up to when they were in a 17-year playoff drought. And they've done a phenomenal job over there. You get Josh Allen, and people are lining up because they have a chance to win the Super Bowl every year. And I think that's what we're working to build here.
Kevin, what about the start that Jack Quinn has had to the season? Sort of an underwhelming start, given especially what he was able to do last year with that smaller amount of games played. What have you seen from him, and maybe what are you hoping to see, you know, as you guys sort of enter the rest of the season?
Yeah, I think Jack is, I think he admittedly would say that he's hard on himself. He's not performing to the level that he expects, that we expect, but it's not going to be because he doesn't put the work in. Like I said, I think sometimes, especially with younger players, not that Jack's young per se anymore, but still finding his way in the league, you have ups and downs. But you have to work with him. You have to just help him find ways to improve. I think the coaches have done some extra things through video, get him in the weight room, and just stuff like that. But I believe in him, and you know, we're going to help him.
About cap space quite a few times since the season began. I remember you mentioning in September that you're going to spend what you think it takes to win. You've got around $8 million right now, and this is the 1 year when the buyout of Jeff Skinner, you've got a little bit more runway here. Based on what you've seen through 25 or so games, I know you're not going to help yourself in trade negotiations by announcing it to us, but I'm just wondering, do you feel a greater sense of urgency to use? It's almost 10% of the cap that you have available to you at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer is yes, except, like, it's not in a vacuum, though, Lance. Like, you have to look at past this year when you're putting your roster together. And the cap, I think I've clearly explained before, has never been something that I'm as focused on as all of you or the fans. We're trying to build our roster out that we're able year after year to compete. And if you go add an $8 million player that's got 5 years left on his contract, what does that do for the next round of guys? And that's what my job is, to make sure we're positioning ourselves not only today but into the future. So if there's players out there we think that it will help us today, that also keeping the long-term view in mind, we'll act on it.
But you already know you're not paying big money to Quinn or Levi now, and in July that might have been a question. You know that now, that they're not getting big money deals after the season.
Hey, I'm glad. I wish you were their agent.
You know, I mean, but the whole world knows that just by watching the games. So, I mean, and you're right, you have to take the long-term view, but we're talking about this year. I mean, you cannot go 14 years out of the playoffs. I mean, teams make it just out of dumb luck. I mean, I understand you're probably doing consistent trade talks with teams, and I know the Trouber rumors are out there right now. He might be on the team tomorrow, for all we know. The question, I think, is simply, why isn't there another Jason Zucker type 1 year veteran kind of acquisition being made? Not a guy with 5 years left on his deal. You've got the room on the cap this year where you can still deal with future years.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I'd have to go into specifics, which is tricky in these situations. But if you go back to the summer, there were a short list of UFA guys that, you know, we had targeted, and fortunately we were able to get Zucker because I think he's really stepped in and been a stabilizing player and been a good leader and mentor and played well on the ice. There were other guys pursued, chose other places. That's what happens in the UFA market. And in terms of trades, I mean, there was, in my mind, a trade that we worked really hard at this summer that we went all in on. You guys probably would have roasted me, said we were going to overpay to get the player, and they ended up not trading him, and he's still on that team. So it's not from lack of want, but we're not going to go, Mike, and just make a trade so you guys can say we've spent to the cap if we don't think it makes sense for now and into the future. And that's just, you just can't operate like that.
So is it true, did you have Martin Aitches and he refused to sign an extension?
Yeah, I mean, I can't talk about our players and other teams.
I know you said you're always reevaluating, but do you feel like, you know, going back to the summer, you said the time is now. You brought Lindy in, and that was like the big emphasis, that the time is now. Do you still feel like you're putting this team in the best position possible to then break the drought at the end of the season?
Yeah, it's a fair question. I say the time is now because I believe in the people in this room, and I believe in the coaching staff. And are we where we want to be right now? No. We're 26 games in. We'll continue to look at every possible scenario if there's a way to add to our team. But look, it is. I'm going to go to war with these guys, and I will not change. I will not back down from that. I believe in the people in our room, and I wouldn't say that if I didn't know the opportunity we have. I know what it takes to win a Stanley Cup in this league. I do. And it's not easy, and you have to be really diligent with the decisions you make, and you have to put your team in the best position, which we're going to continue to talk about and debate, and you're going to work at things, and certain things unfortunately don't end up working out, and certain other opportunities and doors do, and they will open. So we'll stay on top of that. But do I believe in this team, and do I believe we're going to be a team that takes a step here? I do.
Believe in the coaching staff. I don't think we ever asked you in the summer how you arrived at the decision to not bring in any assistance from the outside. It was just Lindy, and then obviously promoting Seth, but he was within the organization. How did you arrive at that decision?
Yeah, Lindy and I, you know, talked about that when we were going through the process. He asked a lot of questions about the staff and the roles. I gave him my honest feedback, and I asked him, I mean, you've been around a long time. You're one of the all-time longest tenured coaches. Like, if you have people that you want to be here, then let's talk about that. And Lindy was very, very adamant to, he wanted to get to know the current people. And, you know, we would talk back and forth, and we arrived with the staff that we have currently in place. And I think Lindy ultimately, if he didn't feel comfortable with the people in the room, and then they wouldn't be in the room, and we would talk about it. But we have an excellent coaching staff, and I think if you asked every one of the players in there, they'd say the same thing.
Last one.
There's a perception on the outside that ownership doesn't give you the resources that you need to win. I know that you've mentioned in the past what Terry and Kim have done for the city, but we're talking about today. And I look at your pro scouting staff, and it's smaller than a lot of teams in the league. I look at your development staff, and it hasn't grown since you guys have brought in basically 10 to 15 draft picks a year. And I'm just wondering, in what ways, other than player salaries, can you express that Terry has given you every ability to build a team that can win now instead of years from now?
Yeah, I mean, I understand why I get asked this every press conference. Terry has done everything he can to provide us every possible resource to win hockey games, and that's all I can ask for in my position. How many pro scouts we have or development staff we have versus what other teams have isn't really something I overly get concerned about. What we evaluate every, you know, at the end of every season is, where do we need to add? Do we have more that we need to put, resources we need to put in a certain area? Maybe it's analytics, so you turn the analytics staff into a little heavier. Maybe it's pro scouting, where we added one this past summer, player development. I mean, I think those guys are doing a phenomenal job. They're flying all over the world. We're getting coverage. I don't think I've had one agent since we kind of rebuilt the staff ever call me and say that one of our prospects wasn't getting attention or wasn't getting feedback, and they've done an incredible job representing organizations. So Terry's all in. I talk to him every day. he wants this as bad as any of us, trust me. And he wants to be part of the solution with me to talk about where do we need to find success, or what do we need to do to help this team. I guess at the end of the day, that's all I can really say.
What's your reaction last night? Have you talked to Chris King, or do you plan to?
You're just setting me up on this one, because I guess the best part is I don't totally understand it. You know, felt like one of those games where it was a 2-goal swing. You know, Kinger's a former line mate of mine, so I guess I shouldn't need to talk to him this afternoon.
All right, that was Sabres general manager Kevin Adams from yesterday, his press conference with the media, including our very own Paul Hamilton. And, of course, if you missed any of that and you want to listen back, it's in our on-demand audio section. Check it out, WGR550.com. Well, Buffalo today loses their sixth in a row, 5-2 to Utah. 2 weeks ago, they were in third place. They were just 3 points back of the Toronto Maple Leafs for first, and now they have lost six in a row. They'll try to break the losing skid on this five-game homestand Monday night, 7 o'clock against Detroit. We'll have the Steve Foley Law pregame show starting at 6, and then, of course, Dan and Rob will have the call. That'll wrap things up here from KeyBank Center on a Saturday afternoon. Want to thank you for listening. Want to thank our crew, Evan DePasquale, our network producer back in our Amherst studios, the crew here at KeyBank Center, Pat Malacaro, Jonathan Koziel, Tom Maddie was our engineer, Paul Hamilton, our reporter, and for Dan Dunleavy and Rob Ray, I'm Brian Koziel. Again, the final, Utah 5, Buffalo 2. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Enjoy the Bills game tomorrow. And I'll talk to you Monday night here with the Red Wings in town, right here on the Buffalo Sabres Radio Network.